Big Brother Canada 4 has come to a close, which means it's time for another edition of the Reality TV We're Happy Hour. But hold on there. Another wild card has been played. Jordan Parhar is out for the evening. My name is Mike Bloom. I am in for him. Jordan has been having a heck of a time down at Reality Rally in California. Though actually, in a bit of breaking news, he might be stranded in California at the moment. So we wish him the best. More on that story as it develops. But enough about that. We are here to talk about the just finished episode of Big Brother Canada 4, the Sunday episode of week 7, I believe it is. And I'm joined by two of our RHAP live feed correspondents. First, he has been sitting Shiva for the entire weekend in honor of Mitch's departure, but he's finally ready to come back and move on. It's Taryn Armstrong. Taryn, how you doing?
I'm doing great. We've got all sorts of substitutions for you tonight because we want to keep you nervous the whole show. That's our goal.
Perfect, exactly, because everyone's going to really enjoy themselves for the entire week as long as they're on their sitting at the edge of their chair. We are also joined by a guy who can do a hair flip 100 times better than Raul ever could in any type of pool. It's Alex Kidwell. Alex, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Yeah, flipping what hair I don't have. Yeah, that's always fun. I'm excited to be here. I'm filling in. I'm the wild card. I should maybe do an Australian accent. Oh, wait, that's not Australian at all.
Yeah, so I should mention that Brett Wolgamott was supposed to join us at first, but he has disappeared. We're unsure if he was, you know, taken out to go to an Ariana Grande contest or to meet with the Dallas Cowboys or anything like that. But our third wheel is temporarily misplaced, so we have our own third wheel here in Alex. But we're here to talk about Big Brother Canada 4. Just so you know, we are live here on robhasawebsite.com. So we're here to take your questions and comments throughout the show. Please reach out to us on Twitter using hashtag RHAP, or if you're watching this video on the YouTube via robhasawebsite.com/YouTube, feel free to leave a question there. We'll be answering them periodically over the course of this episode. But let's get down to business here. A week ago, it looked like the third wheel was right on top of the world, and they have summarily fallen down to the bottom once again in the course of a few days, as in a leaving off from the cliffhanger that ended Thursday's show. Maddie has won head of household, and by the end of this episode, we see these star-crossed lovers, if you want to call them that, Jared and Kelsey, put on the block. Now, Taryn, there was a lot of talk in this week that showed Mitch summarily booted from the house about whether the third wheel was making a good decision in going after Mitch. Now that we're sort of results-oriented here and looking at how the house is right now, did the third wheel make a good decision in getting rid of Mitch, seeing where they are right now?
No, I mean, it was never a good decision, and it's certainly not a good decision now. If we're looking at it tangibly, if Maddie wins this HOH with Mitch still in the house, Mitch had control over Maddie, and he was looking at going after Tim, Cass, and the brothers this week had the twist not happened. We don't necessarily know what would have happened with Kelsey in the house, but we have reason to believe that he still would have gone after Tim, knowing that Tim was onto him and talking about going after him in very vague ways. So I think that very definitely the third wheel would not be on the block this week had Mitch been in the game. And he was one of their allies. Even if he wasn't the most loyal, he was certainly more loyal than the people who immediately turned their backs on the third wheel as soon as Maddie won HOH.
Alex, I feel like, I mean, the third wheel definitely sounds like a broken record here. I feel like you can take what happened in week 4 and sort of copy and paste it into this week a little bit. But it seems like specifically Kelsey's argument this episode was a lot of like, I don't understand what we're doing differently that everyone else isn't doing that's allowing us to be a target. And I mean, you got to say, like, listen, girl, there are three of you that are an extremely solid alliance, arguably the most solid alliance in the house at this point. What do you think it is that's not making her see what danger they present to the rest of the house as a whole?
It's just the fact that she has the least knowledge of the game. I mean, this is somebody that I don't even think she finished one season in Sequester. I think she talked about like she couldn't get through 3 episodes of the show. And it's like, how do you expect someone to be able to play something that they couldn't even focus on enough to watch? You know what I mean? So it's like we're always in this position with Kelsey where she was in kind of over her head. And it's just very obvious as soon as the screws get put to her that she just doesn't know how to react. And her instinct is to give up because she's not used to being in that position probably in her normal life. She usually gets things very easily. So this is tough.
I'm going to have a little bit of a hot take here, and I'd be intrigued to find out your guys' opinion on this. I think Kelsey is a great character, but a terrible player. Do you guys agree or disagree on that?
I agree that she's a terrible player.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that. As far as a character, like, I see the appeal in that, like, you know, she even talks about it herself because she hasn't, for whatever reason, she hasn't watched Big Brother, but she has read Game of Thrones, and she sees herself as a bit of a Cersei Lannister, which is fair. She's definitely like the Cersei of the house a little bit. So from a character perspective, I'll give you that.
And we also have to consider, like, she was out of the house. Like, I don't think she became even remotely a good character until she came back. And that's due to circumstance, not because of who she is necessarily. I mean, both times she's been on the block now, she's just been like, oh, I just hate all of this. I just want to go home. Who cares? This game is stupid.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the toughest thing as well. I mean, I think there were a variety of a series of unfortunate events that really led up to Mitch's demise last week. And let's sort of refrain from beating that dead horse, lest the Big Brother Canada producers actually bring that horse back to life and put it in the house in the middle of the season as a big twist. But I feel like we talked about how it sucks that of all the people to get this buyback into the house, it was Kelsey, because I mean, as much of a character potential as she may have, she is, you know, she was when she left the house, she was a little stone faced. And yes, she does look kind of like a porcelain doll in terms of I don't think we've ever seen the upper half of her face move whatsoever over the course of her 7 weeks in the house. But it seemed like she wasn't really that invested in the game to begin with. I would say the character potential that I saw in her was in those first few weeks when her back was sort of up against the wall. It was fun to see someone that I didn't really expect to kind of come out of the woodwork to really come out with guns blazing. So they actually made the accusation, or at least, you know, they talked about in the DR this episode that Jared wasn't the head of this, you know, three-headed snake, the third wheel, as they call it. It's actually Kelsey. Taryn, let's set the record straight here. Who, in your opinion, is the leader of the third wheel?
The leader is Kelsey in the sense that Jared is holding Kelsey in front of him. Jared is by far the best player in that group, but he lets Kelsey lead knowing that it makes her more of a target than him.
Okay, yeah, I could see. So I guess purely by what you see right in front of you, Kelsey would be the leader just because she's the first person you see. Yeah. Before we bury the leader in terms of our third wheel talk, I do want to talk about the HOH competition, which is what started this episode. I know you guys talked on Friday about a little bit of controversy that happened in the house. Alex, we were able to actually see the question that happened tonight, which was after, you know, it wasn't the second question or third question. It wasn't those types of things, but it was pretty well into the competition. But I believe the question was, did the jackpot alarm go off before or after Joel completed his task on day 15? So now that we've seen the question, in your opinion, was it worth the arguments that the house guests had, or did you think it was fairly straightforward, comparatively speaking?
I mean, it is like coming as someone with a bit of an English background, that sentence should start with on day 15, comma, and then you do the sentence. That being said, I mean, it's, I guess it is in there. So like, you know, they're not going to go back and redo this one. I mean, if they redid one for Emmett, that they've clearly shown like the precedence in that if they feel like it's really unfair, they'll go back and redo it. So, you know, I don't know if it was, it is ridiculous that Maddie was the only one to get it right and she didn't even know what was going on. So yeah. In that sense, it's like, but it's a total crapshoot to a degree anyway. So I don't really have too much trouble with it because I never put too much stock in who wins the competitions. I'm more interested in how people play the scenario after it happens.
Yeah, yeah. And if there's a competition where you literally roll a ball into a hole and that's, you know, that determines whether you win HOH or not, I think this is fine too. Like it's all about luck. And she happened to interpret the question in the right way and everyone else happened to not. And that's just how the competitions go.
Listen, this is no how many, you know, gallons are in the giant teacup with the door open or, you know, are the guinea pigs related? It's not on that level. I think it's just, as you said, Alex, it's very tricky wording. But Maddie does become HOH for the second time in the season, which is extremely interesting. If I may make a Better Call Saul analogy, Maddie is sort of a chimp carrying a machine gun here, specifically with her, you know, with her main theory going into this week, which is, again, according to the DR, I want to make everybody nervous. Now, Taryn, in a game where at this point you should be seeing some alliances at least try to coagulate a little bit, Is this a fool? Is this, you know, a fool worthy theory, or is there some validity to this theory of I don't want to let anyone know my intentions, so I want everyone to be on their game?
I mean, I'm sure there are specific circumstances where that might be the best move moving forward, but in almost all circumstances, it's not. Because if you make people nervous the whole week, then that's a whole week of people being nervous about you, and that's going to resonate with them moving forward in the game. The next week, when you're not HOH, people are still going to be nervous about you, and that's not going to be good when you don't have power. You're going to be up on the block because people are like, well, I was scared all last week, so now I just want to remove this wild card from the picture so I can feel safe again.
Yeah, Alex, did Maddie just spend 2 weeks building a bridge and then summarily burn it again in doing this?
Yeah, that seems to be Maddie's move. You know, that's her go-to play. I mean, she came in wanting to make big moves, and she has. I mean, she took out someone who wasn't coming after her, and now she's, you know, she's going through with moves that everyone wants her to make, but she's gone about it in a way that alienated a lot of people. And, you know, she didn't like use the opportunity to like cement a tighter bond necessarily with like some people that she was kind of on the rocks with a little bit, like maybe Cassandra. Like, you know, there's an opportunity when you're head of household not just to say who's going on the block, but to encourage the people who aren't going on the block that there's a reason that you're protecting them and that you've got them and stuff. And just that's just not Maddie's game. Like, she's just wanting to, you know, live by the sword or die by the sword. And good TV. Bad gameplay.
And it's funny you say that, because when Maddie was talking to people that she wasn't going to put up, the most explanation she gave them for why she wasn't putting them up was, you know, it's just eye for an eye. That's my thing. And that was code for her. That was code for her saying, I'm going to protect you and I want you to protect me too. But she never actually said that. She just said eye for an eye.
Yeah, Maddie's so old school, she's going back to the Babylonians in terms of her gameplay, using Hammurabi's code to determine how she's going to play her game. I mean, the ironic thing about what you were just saying, though, Alex, about how, like, you know, she wanted to keep everyone on their toes, is that the first thing she does, according to the edited show, is that she goes up to Raul, and she goes up to Jared, and she says, gives him a hug and says, don't worry about it, you're safe. And then at the end of the day, at the end of this episode, we find one of them is nominated. So the thing is that, like, I wonder when in her mental process she decided to take on this strategy of, like, I'm just going to keep my intentions hidden in the closet and wait. Everyone else will sort of, you know, walk on the outside of the closet, waiting to look in, seeing what's inside the closet. But it seems like that wasn't her strategy initially, considering that maybe it was her freak out of finally being able to see pictures of her as a brunette, but she goes up to two people that she could actively be targeting and that she does end up targeting and says, no, you're good for the week. It's just, it baffles me. These people baffle me, and I kind of love it, though, in a way. I'm a little malicious in that perspective to myself.
Well, basically, she went around. You're right in that it doesn't make sense, but that is what she continued to do despite vocalizing her intention to keep everyone on their toes. She basically told all the people she was considering nominating that they were safe, and everyone else, she was like, I'm not sure yet. I'm not going to say. So all the people that were safe, she was making feel uncomfortable. All the people that weren't safe, she was trying to make feel comfortable, despite telling everyone that she was trying to make everyone uncomfortable.
Yeah, like even Ramsey was freaking out, and Ramsey is sleeping with her. And you know what I mean? Like, the only person who had like complete calmness and she never gave any reason to worry was the person who's just got her wrapped around his finger at this point. And that's Tim.
Yeah, and let's talk about that a little bit, because we do get a little bit in this episode. I mean, Maddie flat out says in the DR, Tim is my mentor. And so we talk about this gameplay that we've been talking about for the past some odd weeks, where Tim comes in and he basically kind of subtly pushes to her this mentality of, you need to make big moves. And unfortunately, Tim, I'm sorry, you will not be the host of Survivor Australia, even with all that big moves talk. That position has been taken. But Maddie seems to realistically, or at least from the edited show perspective, have this mentality of, I need to make big moves, and my winner equity has just increased tenfold from doing this. Taryn, is this legitimate at all, or is it the inverse? Has her chances, however incrementally small they have been, now reduced by a tenth because of the things she's done this week?
You know, it's kind of funny, because she's somebody that really didn't have and still doesn't have much of a chance of ever winning a jury vote. But so in a way, constantly making big moves is potentially the only way she would ever have a shot to win, even though this drastically decreases her chances of getting to the end. So in a way, maybe it could work for her, even though it's terrible strategy, just because juries tend to look at the big moves and who got out who. And if that's the case, then she could see herself winning. With people like Mitch and Tim on the jury in that instance, I don't see it happening, but it's certainly something to look at. And with Tim, like, this was just obviously Tim. The edit did not give it justice. He had her completely wrapped around his finger. Basically, Tim saw exactly what Mitch had. He had Nikki, he had Maddie, and he had the third wheel. And Tim was like, you know what? Now that Mitch just got struck by this twist, why don't I just move in and replace Mitch and all of his alliances? And he did. He took over Maddie. He took over Nikki. And now he's with the third wheel too. And he's just completely taken over Mitch's game moving forward. And he's looking great for it.
Yeah, Tim is the big brother stepfather at this point. He says, I'm your new daddy now. I'm taking care of you guys. Come in. I drive a motorcycle. I'm cool like your dad was too, you know? Alex, I want to talk about Tim sort of as a conduit here, because Cassandra was really showcased as a possible nominee in this episode, partially because we flash back to it a couple times. Maddie says in her, possible evictee speech on eviction night a couple weeks ago, your ass is grass, and that grass has been growing for the past couple weeks, but Maddie has chosen not to mow it down. How much do you think Tim had an effect on that?
He definitely had an effect. I mean, I do believe, like, if Tim had wanted Cassandra to go up, he certainly could have convinced Maddie. It wouldn't have been a hard sell. Cassandra herself was terrified that Maddie was going to put her up, but she was the only person that didn't talk to Maddie between when Maddie won HOH and when noms happened. And I think in part people are saying, just don't go up there because we know how you are and you're only going to make it worse, because she doesn't know how to, like, not roll her eyes when Maddie's being stupid or something like that. You know what I mean? So she probably would just make it worse. But the fact that she didn't go up there, I mean, usually, like, the one person that doesn't go up and talk to HOH before noms, it's like, there's usually the person that's going up. It's like, oh, well, it's almost a foregone conclusion. But yeah, I mean, you know, Tim steered it a different direction. And because of that, Cassandra's in a good spot, even despite the fact that, yeah, she did way too much this week. I mean, this was a week when, you know, without other people intervening, it really makes sense for Maddie to target the person who she never talks to at all in the house. I mean, probably more than anyone. But, I mean, the simple fact that Tim was able to get in there has now kind of put Cassandra in a position where, even though she's running all over the place, even though she's playing, like, the most aggressive pawn game you could play, where she's talking to everyone on, you know, all different sides, like, she's still kind of protected.
And I feel like, as Maddie, if, you know, I think it was Kelsey might have said, like, one of the dangerous things about Maddie is that she plays a game that's very personal. And I feel like if you're playing that standpoint of a personal game, you can totally use that as a backing point to put Cassandra up. I feel like if you're going through this, you know, this Inigo Montoya-esque game of I'm going to wrong all the people who have wronged me first, nominating, again, Jared, it makes no sense, because you went up to him at the beginning of the week and said you're good to go and then put him up. I just can't get past that fact. I'm sorry. But speaking of Tim and Cassandra, I do want to talk about this. I don't want to say emergence of this alliance, because I'm not entirely sure if it really came to fluency this week, but the Freak Show alliance, which is between Joel, Tim, and Cassandra. Taryn, first off, how old is this alliance really? I know the show sometimes manipulates when these things start. And second of all, what do you think about the pair or the grouping together of these three players?
So this is really interesting. So basically, Cassandra and Joel have had a very strong relationship all throughout the game. They've kept it on the down low. They've kept each other safe at various times. And obviously, Cassandra's been close with Tim. Tim's never been super close with Joel, but he really kind of solidified his relationship with Joel last week when he promised Joel he'd keep him over Mitch. And so that's kind of what brought all three of them together. And what's really interesting about this is that this is basically Cassandra's move. She has Joel and she has Tim, so she's in the center of this thing that's secret. So she's in a great spot here. Tim kind of has the brothers as well, and they're kind of also in that sphere. And so those four are like a really strong group that go down to three, that go down to two with either Cassandra and Joel or Cassandra and Tim. So Cassandra's set up really well here.
Alex, are we seeing the makings of an Onion Alliance type of deal where it seems like this trio is really the main shell, and then as Taryn alluded to, they might be picking up some of these more fringe players to really build a big group to go against a group like the Third Wheel?
Yeah. But I think it's interesting, too, like Taryn was talking about, you know, this is the ideal Onion for Cassandra, because Cassandra has Joel and Cassandra has Tim. But, you know, there's also, you know, if you look at Taryn just mentioned the four that are kind of in the sphere, if you incorporate Nikki, who, you know, as the game gets further and further along, Nikki is really, you know, kind of in there as well. I mean, her vote carries more and more weight every week. You know, Tim's ideal three might be, you know, Nikki and Cassandra, you know what I mean? Or the brothers and Cassandra. So once we get down to that, does seem to be a five, that there's a lot of like threesome combinations percolating within it. But it will be interesting to see, like, if that five does end up solidifying and does end up like trying to take it down to the end, there's still going to be a lot of like internal turmoil, because they don't all see it going down the same way, that the three and the two and the one are different from everyone's perspectives.
Yeah. And this is something I want to get back to when we're talking about the feeds. So remember.
So we can definitely get back to this point later, but I do want to just make one more point about this new freak show. Is Joel on the outside looking in? Is he his own third wheel here in the fact that Tim and Cassandra, at least again, from what we've seen on the show, have been an extremely tight pair? Alex, do you think that, you know, if it happens to come down to these three, we can look back on Joel's game and say, what were you doing pairing up with this obviously close pair that would want to take each other to the end?
I think the thing that Joel benefits from is that first, him and Cassandra were already having game conversations before Tim came in the house. So they do have a longstanding relationship that goes back even further than Tim and Cassandra's, even though Tim and Cassandra are very tight. And also, I think he can benefit from the fact that I don't think, you know, and this is just my personal opinion, I don't believe Cassandra believes she can beat Tim. So if she got down to that point and then was given the option, I do believe she would want to take Joel over Tim to try to win the game. So, you know, that works in Joel's favor for sure. But yeah, it's this perception stuff with Joel. You know, people keep perceiving him as just a total nobody. And if you, you know, let that guy go far enough, I mean, we've seen the results.
Yeah, imagine all the kisses he's going to get on the finale if he ends up winning. Canadian dollars flying his way with his winning that's represented in all so many kisses with all the other New York girls that are that will be coming to his bedside here. I want to talk a little bit about the – I wouldn't even call it a have-have-not competition, guys. I don't know if you would either. Super interesting. This is what they call a slop vote, where essentially each person is given a big bucket of slop. And, I mean, I don't know if they were inspired by Tim's gummy koalas, but it was essentially that, right? They were given a bucket of slop, and they had to distribute it between however many people that they wanted to, and the three house guests that had the most slop were have-nots for the week. Taryn, what did you think about this concept overall? Does it work better for you than the outright have-have-not competition?
Yeah, I mean, it works out way better. Like, I'm not interested in watching a competition pretty much ever, especially when the outcome is, like, just doesn't matter to me at all. So watching them vote and seeing who they're voting for and why the reasoning for voting for those people and the drama that it can cause, I think is way better. I mean, I'm not a fan of the have not thing regardless. I would have preferred this to be like vote to see, you know, who gets a luxury prize or something like that. But in general, I think it works out well. And I'm totally shocked that any of them said anything incriminating while doing that voting, knowing the history of this show.
Yeah, especially since, you know, we just saw a twist take out a pretty big player last week. You would think that, like Maddie tries to do with her HOH strategy, they would all be on edge to not say something incriminating, as you said, lest it be shown to everyone else. I mean, Alex, what did you think about the choices that some people made here? Because you could almost, again, make the corollary back to Tim's HOH week, where theoretically, if people knew this process, they could get together and say, let's gang up on the third wheel. But then you have things like Tim and Cassandra targeting each other. You have the brothers going after Jared. You have Jared going after Raul. Did you like the melee that ensued from this concept?
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, I tweeted something about, I think this is the best have-not competition I've ever seen, and it's not really a competition, you know? This is something similar to an HOH that used to be a recurring thing in the U.S. Big Brother. I think from like 8 to 11, they ran this, where you were like putting, you know, balls in different people's buckets and determining who won, or maybe veto. I think it was a veto.
Yeah, they did that veto for a long time.
That was the pinata one that James won, right? That was it. He got nominated.
And it's great because, I mean, in this situation, obviously, it's like a little, it's not quite as good as it could be because the house is a bit divided. But you see the potential. I mean, if you had like a big conglomerate type of situation like you do some seasons, this really could be one of the instances that causes division within people and starts to create some, you know, social rifts. So like this kind of challenge is great for the game. And I definitely think like the most interesting to me was Jared targeting Raul, because, you know, I mean, all season the narrative's been that the third wheel is this strong powerhouse alliance that nobody can touch. And every chance, every time we see that, like when push comes to shove, like when they're worried about, you know, Raul spilling a secret to Mitch, Jared screams at him. You know, when they're in danger of going on the block, they turn on each other and start yelling and snapping. I mean, and in this moment, like he targets Raul like when given an opportunity. It's just they're not a very strong alliance. And, you know, the narrative has kind of pushed them as being this like powerful block that's just, you know, you remove Kelsey and they're no longer anything.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting point. And I agree. That was probably a lot more interesting than something like Tim and Cassandra going after each other, because, you know, they're Tim and Cassandra. They'll do whatever they want to, I feel like, to make some good TV. But I am intrigued. I agree by this whole idea of Jared going after Raul. I mean, Taryn, from what you saw on the feeds this past week, after Jared has known that Raul was in a side deal with Mitch, was this semi-hostility shown before? Was Jared vocalizing this, or is this somewhat of a new thought to him?
This has been happening ever since the feeds came back from the break, while Mitch was nominated. I mean, Raul nominates his closest ally, gets him evicted, and throughout that entire week, the people he's evicting them for are talking about how annoyed they are with him and how they want to cut him from their alliance. They are not close with Raul really at all. They're constantly talking about how annoyed they are with him. Kelsey's a little bit closer, but yeah, he's out on his own island.
And I feel like we can't talk about this have-not situation without talking about our weekly Nikki Graham meltdown. This one was pretty aggro, in my opinion. I mean, I think the sound effect that Rob made on Friday was actually measured up pretty well to the reaction we actually got from Nikki, considering she was banging on those cellophane windows. Alex, first of all, was the reaction even bigger on the feeds? Did it last for even longer? And overall, I mean, let's kind of take a deeper dive in Nikki as a character here, since strategically she's done a couple things in the past, but she's more so known for this. 7 weeks into Big Brother Canada 4, are you enjoying Nikki on our screens thus far?
It's interesting. I mean, it's a mixed bag. You know, there are times where I'm just so pleasantly surprised with Nikki, because she is like showing just an unbelievable social awareness at times. I mean, especially relative to the other players in the house. You know, like I've over the last few weeks become conditioned to just like, you know, such just misunderstanding of what's going on that, you know, Nikki is sometimes a breath of fresh air at this point, which is, you know, not what I expected coming into this season. But there are also times where I do wonder, it's like, is this cool to have someone who has like, you know, like there's certain people who probably shouldn't play Big Brother. Like if you have a history of like serious depression, serious anxiety, like I just don't know to the extent like that they really measured like Nikki's past and like the effect that slop would have on somebody who's had eating disorders in the past. And like, this is just all new for her. None of this is the game that she played. So it's just, I don't know. There are parts of it that are hard to watch for me. I don't enjoy the meltdown knowing why it's happening to a degree.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I feel like it's almost akin to like Nikki is a bear that they put in a very small cage and the producers just have a pointy stick and they just keep poking her with it. And then they take like the best 2 minutes and put it on TV. I do agree that I think there is a line when it comes to TV production. And granted, it's a very thin line, but there is a line where if you bring someone in who has this known history, as good TV as it may make, you have the propensity to maybe drive this person over the edge. And I think Nikki does a great job of kind of reeling herself back, but you have to wonder every time she has a fit, like this might be like eroding her sanity at this point. Taryn, I know there was, and I don't think this is spoilery, I know there was some talk on Twitter this week about how rumors about how production may have slightly manipulated Nikki's have not duration. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, basically, there was talk about, you know, production is giving Nikki food in the diary room. I think somebody saw her come out with some like stains, like food stains. But as soon as they start talking about it, the feeds get cut, which kind of gives credence to the theory. And honestly, wouldn't be surprising if she had something in her contract before she went in that said, you know, I have an eating disorder and I need a certain amount of food, or, you know, so on and so forth. So basically the idea is she's a have not, but she doesn't have to eat slop all the time.
We actually have a comment here from Stewie92 that says, I was expecting a bigger meltdown from Nikki. Alex, you've watched Nikki for almost 2 months now at this point. Do you agree with Stewie here that you had actually expected some sort of bigger storm to arise out of her?
I don't know. I mean, I think to a degree it is a bit of like, you know, the expectations like exceed reality to an extent. Like, this is still a person. You know what I mean? Like, we can't just like expect her to just be like a meltdown robot. Like, as much fun as it is to see her, that is her like at her worst moments. And like, I don't want to be like a disclaimer and be like, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving type guy over here or anything. Like, that's not what we're doing, but I'm not trying to.
Is that a bad thing to be against drunk driving?
Yeah, they're the worst people in the world, according to Alex Kidwell, or the Mothers Against Drunk Drivers.
I'm not trying to, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm not trying to turn this into like the most PC podcast ever, but at the same time, there is an element of this that's ethically unsound to me.
So we have a question here from DC Sock 721 that I wanted to talk about before we go into the live feeds about the end of this episode with Maddie's speeches. And again, I feel like we're really on this roll here of channeling the Manguiza. Godfrey's blood is running through that house like it's through a chicken head when it gets cut off. DC Sox asks, how great are the speeches? Maddie's nomination speech was amazing TV. Now, at the end of this episode, Maddie does end up nominating Kelsey and Jared. She sort of prods Kelsey a little bit by saying, please help us figure out why we gave you a second chance. Jared, she sort of BS's that you can win this game and I want to get rid of someone who wins this game. Jared and Kelsey are obviously sour. They're talking under their breath. They're snapping remarks. Jared says it's called friendship, Maddie. And Kelsey says, oh yeah, something you know little about. So it's clear that these guys are obviously pissed off about it. Taryn, did you enjoy the end of this episode? Do you feel like it was in character with these three from what we've seen thus far?
I mean, yeah, they're just getting more and more vocal during these ceremonies. I feel like this has been a trend with Big Brother in general, probably since Big Brother 16 with Zach, you know, then going to Godfrey. And now this season, like, they keep trying to emulate the previous seasons, having bigger and crazier speeches, because they know that those are the things that are going to be repeated. Like, you see it at the end of the episode, it's the most important part. Then you see it again at the beginning of the next episode. It's something that they love to cut to. So it's something that really sticks in your mind, and it's something that you want to be able to contribute to for your season. You know, it'll make you memorable. So I really think that's pretty much all it's about, unless it's somebody like Mitch who's actively trying to use it for strategy.
Alex, did Tim have an effect on Maddie's speech as well? Or was this 100% from Maddie's brain? I'm really going to stick it to them.
It's so funny because, like, I mean, I really listened to all of the conversations between Tim and Maddie and Ramsey and Maddie, and they gave her like so many reasons to nominate Jared. They were like legit, you know, like salient reasons. And she just comes out with like, you could beat me in the end. It's like she went in the diary room and was like, oh, what did they tell me to say? And she just couldn't recall a single one, dude. There must have been 20, but she couldn't remember any of them. So we get, you could beat me at the end, even though there's 10 people left. And it is hard to take that seriously, I admit. But at the same time, man, when you're laughing at the person who puts you on the block, like, you deserve to be on the block. That's terrible gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, these people, I know I was on Rob's show a month ago and I talked about how if it was the third wheel or Dallas, Maddie, and Ramsey, I prefer the third wheel just as personalities. But what a difference a month makes. I cannot stand these people, guys. I mean, they are on a moral high ground that is so high up that they must be having altitude sickness at this point. I mean, just watching them stew around the house for a second week in this time period to just be like, we're the good people. I can't believe this is happening to us. I mean, you guys are saints for having to sit through all that stuff 24 hours a day, in my opinion.
Well, we have an outlet, fortunately, that many people don't have.
Yes, that's very true. Other people are screaming it into their, you know, into blankets before they go to sleep. But you guys get to vent it on podcasts. So let's jump into spoilers. So for those of you that are popping out, just so you know, because of the live Survive at Know-It-Alls, which, by the way, if you're in New York, where Joel's first kiss lives, or lived at one point, come to this live Survive at Know-It-Alls. If you're going to be there, I will be there. Taryn will be there. Alex will be there. Brent will be there. Jordan Parhar will be there. The entire crew will be assembled. Come say hi. We'd be happy to talk to you guys about all the ludicrous things that are going on right now in this house. And just so you know, there will not be a live show on Wednesday because of said Survivor Know-It-Alls. But Jordan has actually prepared a mystery surprise podcast to drop on Wednesday. So there will be Big Brother Canada material in your feeds for those of you that will not be at the event. But for now, gentlemen, let us talk spoilers. Alex, Jared and Kelsey are on the block. Who has won the power of veto for this week?
The power of veto. Well, first they did the draw, and the players were a dream draw for the third wheel. I believe it was Nikki who was drawn, Cassandra who was drawn, and Raul?
I think so, yeah.
So given the matchup, Jared won power of veto.
Okay. Jared, I mean, it seemed like, as you said, the odds were very in his favor, no matter what the competition was. Taryn, do we know what the comp was?
We do, but I completely blanked on it. Alex?
I can't remember either, buddy. This is tough.
From what I read, I believe it was like it might have been a maze or something.
Yes, that was right.
Because yeah. Cassandra got lost. That's right.
Oh, God. All right. Cassandra is 19199 step away from becoming a Tala analog in that perspective. Okay, so Jared's won the veto. He's obviously going to take himself off. Are we to assume, Taryn, that Raul is going to go up in his place?
Yes, as of right now. It wasn't always that way. But again, kind of Tim stepped in and some other people stepped in and made sure that Maddie was in the right direction with her replacement nominee.
Alex, who was Maddie possibly thinking about, this chimp with a machine gun, to fire a stray bullet at as the renom?
I mean, you know, in the back of her head, there was always, I guess, the possibility that it could be Cassandra. But really, it was more the idea of a pawn. Either Nikki or Joel were, you know, the two that she was thinking of. But it was always with the notion that she thought she could put up someone to ensure that someone from the third wheel goes home, which is just, yeah. I mean, you got to talk her out of that, man, because then there's two votes floating out there that are third wheel votes. They just have to get two more. That's just no good. You don't want that.
Okay, so let's make the assumption now that Kelsey and Raul are facing the vote on Thursday. Let's ignore the wild card that's apparently coming into the house again, or at least will be announced. Taryn, looking at the situation right now in the house, who is going home this week?
Raul.
Oh, no. He's going to be doing a lot of hair flips in that jury house, since he'll probably be the only one swimming in that pool, because I don't know if Mitch will want to do anything with him after Raul was summarily sent there.
Last week, there was a conversation between Mitch and Raul where Mitch was saying, I really think this was a bad move for your game. And Raul was like, I don't think so. And I tweeted it saying, they're going to be having this conversation in jury. Jordan Parhar can relate. And I think that's exactly what we're going to be, what's going to happen.
Yeah, Raul will be the Cindy who comes in like, hey, give me a hug. And then, you know, Mitch will be like, get away from me. Don't touch me.
Rail with a U. That'll be Raul. So, Alex, what are the house guests thinking in evicting Raul over Kelsey? Because, again, we see Kelsey and Jared are a very tight pair. That's why they were initially nominated. Wouldn't the plan be, once again, let's get rid of Kelsey so we separate those two and kind of keep Jared and Raul, who we talked about before, are kind of not exactly the biggest companions with each other in the house?
And you would think so, because that was the move originally. But, you know, now that Kelsey's come back and demonstrated she has no game other than this game, you know, the stick with Jared and stick with Raul and, you know, hate on everyone else. She's not really as much of a threat as she seemed, you know, in the early stages of the game when she was able to get herself out of Levita's crosshairs and all that stuff. Additionally, everyone realizes that there's a downside to breaking up the third wheel, which this would do, as you talked about. The downside being that Jared as a single seemed to be in a really great position in the house. And Raul as a single when he was with Mitch was also in a great position in the house. If you keep Jared and Kelsey together, Kelsey, you know, almost like the proverbial ball and chain, kind of shackles Jared and keeps him from being as good of a player as he otherwise could be, because he's always seen as a duo with the person who's kind of universally, to a degree, despised. And, you know, then it, you know, it can set other people up to be able to still use them as a target to push them forward.
I feel like I'm almost having flashbacks to that truncated week one here, where, I mean, I feel like people like Tim are vocalizing mentalities that the brothers had when they won that veto in the first week, which was, I don't want to make myself a target. Jared and Kelsey are obviously a big target, being a power couple in this house. Let me keep that power couple so that it will buy me one more week, since they're going to be the bigger target. Taryn, is there a certain point in this game when that mentality no longer works, in your opinion?
I mean, honestly, not really. Not until maybe Final Five. I mean, we saw with Vanessa last year, people thought that she was keeping the Oz twins way too long, but it was exactly what she needed to do, because she knew that bringing them to Final Six, Final Five, at that point, they have to get lucky and win all the competitions, or else they have to go home. So that's kind of the idea, I think. And another aspect of it is that Raul not only has no other allies because he took out Mitch, his basically his only ally, but he also demonstrated that he's willing to take out his closest ally. So nobody wants to be his closest ally, whereas Kelsey is much more seen as much more workable. They can kind of drag her along as a target. So it's kind of a no-brainer for everyone.
And plus, the Maddie-Kelsey thing is always going to be there. That's another big point that I forgot about, too.
Well, let's also talk about a reason that Raul might have gotten on everyone's radar this week. Let's talk a little bit about this brownie gate that apparently happened over the past couple of days. Alex, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So, yeah, this was before, you know, obviously this has happened, you know, before, you know, veto is being decided. So it's really terrible timing. But Raul, we know, is a have not. And we know from the episode also that he did not handle it particularly well. He took it upon himself, him and Kelsey, to, you know, start kind of, you know, squirreling away food for the winter, if you will, in their bags. Food that's for the haves, not the have nots. So, like, we're not talking like, you know, even like potatoes here. We're talking like luxury items. So, yeah, not just a couple brownies. The entire tray, 10 brownies, he took and like hid in the bottom of his dirty clothes bag. And he swore to people up and down, like on Jesus, he swore he did not take the brownies. And later, Ramsey like went in there on the pretense of cuddling with him and dug through his bag and found the brownies and just was so mad. He's like, dude, you swore on your family, like for the brownies, like if you're willing to do that. And then so it became a huge narrative in the house. I mean, Ramsey told everybody, and then everybody who's not third wheel was upstairs in the HOH, like saying, you know, Ramsey's talking about, you know, my mom always said that how you do one thing is how you do everything. Like if you'll lie like that about the brownies, like how are you playing this game, you know? And so, I mean, it's just like the worst thing Raul could do. And then when he was confronted about it, he was so, so dismissive. He was like, well, I only took a few, like 10. And it's just like, you know, and he was just, you know, making it seem like they were like, well, you took stuff too. Like, and you know, Nikki like took like one avocado for herself for later. It's like totally different, you know? So it was just like terribly played and terrible timing.
What a spoiled brat. Honestly, that's what he is. And I, you know what? I've had it up to here with Raul. And it's just because like this past week, he's been completely ridiculous. Specifically on this eviction episode, after Mitch gives that veto speech, and he has the audacity to take personal offense and be affronted at the fact that Mitch, you know, called him out on his game when he nominated him and said, oh no, don't take it personally. It's just a game move. Don't worry about it. Like the hypocrisy of this man is just confounding. I don't know. So Taryn, speaking towards this Browning Gate, what do you think is the percent chance that this is going to be the reason that's shown on Wednesday night as to why Raul is the renom?
I think it's probably going to be the thing. It's going to be like, well, we were thinking Kelsey, but after this brownie thing, we just have to get rid of Raul. It's such an easily digestible storyline.
And the funniest part is that like Cassandra is pitching to Kelsey, like, hey, we're going to work in secret to save you. And meanwhile, Maddie knows Raul's going, is totally fine with it. And like Kelsey thinks she's getting one over on her. So it's pretty great there.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, speaking of Kelsey, let's talk a little bit about how the third wheel has been kind of reacting, specifically after the nominations. I mean, Alex, has anything really out of the ordinary happened with these three people, or have they just spent the week kind of sitting around and moping about their position?
Yeah, I mean, whether it's, you know, in the Hundo suite or in the Have Not Chapel, like, it's just the three of them, like, laying down. Mostly Kelsey just talking crap about Maddie. It's just like, it's repetitive and redundant, and it's not getting you out of your position in the game. But yeah, I mean, they're just beating the horse well past the point of death. It's hard. You know, I find myself on the other feeds a lot more when they're just doing that, because there's really nothing coming out of it. It's just circle talk, you know, to make themselves feel better.
Last week, we literally saw Kelsey couldn't stop dancing. Like, literally, she was dancing during conversations, many conversations, couldn't keep still. And as soon as she was nominated, she was basically like, oh, this game is just the worst. I just want to go home. I'm going to use the veto on you, Jared, if I win it. I just wanted you to stay and me to go. And it's just like, this is the girl we brought back into the house to take out the best player and then quit the week after.
Yeah, and that's the problem as well. We saw that even at the end of the episode where Maddie says, like, okay, guys, I hope you need to fight it out. I can't wait to see you guys, you know, campaign against each other. And they said, we're not going to do that. And they didn't do it the first time around, Maddie. What makes you think they're going to do it now, especially? You bring this person back who really kind of, I guess she wants to be there, but she really has no volition. She took care of her target. She got her revenge. Now she can sort of die out in the street in peace. We talked a little bit earlier about Cassandra. Alex, I feel like a lot of people have been talking about Cassandra this week in terms of not only outside of the freak show, but really putting herself in a good position in the house moving forward. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, she, you know, as I talked about earlier, like, she is the person going to Kelsey. I think Kelsey, you know, if Kelsey is going to stay, and it does look like Kelsey's going to stay, she's going to need somebody besides Jared who she's going to want to work with. And it does seem like the person she trusts the most besides Jared is Cassandra. Cassandra has done a good job of really maintaining that relationship, whereas the brothers have kind of, like, tried to visibly distance themselves. And Cassandra's lucky that she, you know, is in good enough with Tim and good enough with Joel and the people that have influence over other people in the house that it's not coming back to bite her. People aren't saying, like, why is Cass talking to all sides yet? But yet, you know what I mean? Like, there's going to come a point in the game where Cass isn't going to be able to maintain these game related conversations with as many people as she is right now. But at this point, it's working for her, and she's got, like, really the best players in the house looking to protect her right now. So it's taking care of itself.
Taryn, with the third wheel, the targets of this week, are people that were sort of loosely associated with the Alliance, like Cassandra or the brothers, are they still commiserating with them, or are they sort of striking out on their own in order to make side deals?
I mean, everyone's all over the place. So basically, after Mitch leaves, the whole house was restructured, and we kind of touched on it with the freak show thing, where it's basically Tim and Cassandra are in the center of everything. Tim has people like the brothers. He has Nikki. He's got a good relationship with Jared, whereas Cass has Joel. She's got Kelsey. And she's kind of, like, positioned herself well. And they're kind of, I think, the two that are going to be running the house for a while and ultimately each other's biggest competition now that Mitch is gone. So basically what Cassandra's been doing is, I think this is what she's doing, is either she's paranoid or she's actively doing this thing, which is really good, which is she's been trying to target the brothers next week. She's been saying, Maddie told me that she has a final two with the brothers, that she trusts them and she can control them. And she appears to have Tim completely on board with not trusting the brothers, despite him really having probably the most influence over them than anyone in the house. So it looks like she's trying to cut his support away so that she can kind of bring him further along in the game, neutered. And as that's happening, we've seen Cassandra and Tim talk about who they want to bring to the end. They talk about how they're kind of annoyed with Joel. They're not sure if they want to take him to the end. Maybe they want to take Jared and Kelsey instead. I'm imagining they said that they want to be in the final three with Jared, because they like him a lot and they want to potentially be in the final four with Jared and Kelsey. I'm not sure how much of that is true because that's just not the smartest thing in the world. I imagine Cassandra imagines that Joel is going to be in the final five and she's going to kind of attach to him and Tim and make a move there. So we've got a lot of different angles with Cassandra and Tim, and it's interesting to see how it's going to play out. The brothers are in a lot of trouble now because Tim is doing a lot of work against them, having no longer trusting them. Nikki's already against them, so on and so forth. So we're looking at brothers in trouble next week. Tim and Cassandra are definitely running the show right now.
Yeah, and it's really, I was just going to say, it's really interesting because like Taryn was talking about, you know, like you've got this Cassandra and Tim relationship and they're having a conversation, just the two of them, about how they want to take Jared far and they both like Jared. But even that you can't necessarily trust because you've got an interesting dynamic where like Tim knows that Cassandra likes Jared, so he might just be saying it to try to string her along. And at the same time, like Cassandra knows that Tim's trying to work on that and that he feels like, you know, he might want to take good players to the end because he said that before. So it's like, it's a little bit of like they're both telling each other what they want to hear, but they are totally working together.
Let's talk about someone that we really haven't talked about at all this podcast, about Ramsey. I mean, he did sort of get friend-zoned a little bit this episode in more ways than one, where he suggested nominate Cassandra and he was vehemently denied and accused of also like puppeteering her HOH. But though it seems like he also has this side deal going on with Jarrett as well. Taryn, what does Ramsey's situation look like in the house right now?
Well, so first I want to briefly mention that conversation with Maddie. She was just telling him prior to him making that statement, I kind of want to target Cassandra. I really kind of want to get her out, maybe nominate her. And he was kind of against that at first. And then he eventually was turned around based on what she was saying. He was like, all right, let's get Cassandra out. And then she was like, why are you trying to tell me what to do? And freaked out on him like we saw. So they completely, I don't know why they didn't edit it like that, because it was really funny. But it seems like they're really trying to keep Maddie like with a decent edit so that she's not quite as like loony as she is on the feeds. But that was just hilarious. As far as Ramsey goes, I think he's probably playing the closest we've seen to Godfrey's game. He was very active in the beginning. He got caught. Nobody really trusted him, but he's made some discreet relationships. He has a persona of weakness and of just social ineptitude, and people ignore him. And I really like that he threw this HOH competition. It was kind of risky because there were some people that were going to go after Maddie, and then by extension, that means him. But I think it's worth the risk to continue to maintain an aura of weakness, to not get involved with things. Maddie is HOH right now and he's her number two, but he's getting none of the blood on his hands from this. He's been talking to everyone saying Maddie's this crazy person and nobody's questioning it. I really think, and I've been saying this for a while, I think Ramsey is going to go far in this game if people don't catch on. It's just a matter of, can he make a move toward the end? Can he hold it together like Godfrey did?
Yeah, well, I think we talked about the downside of Godfrey's game during our Big Brother Players Ranking podcast about how, I mean, a downside is possibly that at the end of the game, you're seen by a jury allegedly as someone who didn't do a lot. So I think that I agree that I think Ramsey does have this upside in that, like, I think he does is able to work with a lot of different people in the house. And I think this Jared thing is really great as well, because he's able to kind of keep his connections there. But I can definitely see the double-edged sword there, in that if he gets to that end and he's only won that like one veto, people might look at him and say like, well, what have you done for me lately? So-and-so has made enemies, but he or she won all these HOHs and such. So it'll be an interesting road for Ramsey in the coming weeks. Let's take a question here from Jordan Chong. This refers to the slop vote. Wouldn't it be better if they had to pour the slop in the buckets in front of everyone? So let's go back to the slop vote here. I would actually love to hear, Alex, once, you know, everyone realized what the have-not competition was, did any sort of fireworks happen based on who got the most slop out of everybody?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, people were upset, but it was hard to directly pinpoint, like, who gave who what and how much, you know, so it's very easy to be like, I didn't give it to you, you know what I mean? And just say, like, you know, because other people had good amounts. So it's just easy to be like, and you don't remember exactly how much everyone had after a little while. So it's really easy to just kind of like blame someone else. And it just, you know, ultimately just resulted in the people who were have-nots just being surly for a good amount of time and really continuing on into kind of where we are now.
Oh, boy. So Junsong fan account says, if Kelsey does leave on Thursday, will Jared be less of a target? So let's talk about Jared in this situation, Taryn. He has won the veto. He is safe for the week, but two of his closest allies are up. Should Kelsey end up leaving this Thursday if they change the target at the last minute, how much does Jared's game improve from there on out?
I think it would improve a lot, actually. Basically, the best case scenario for him was Kelsey coming in and acting like a buffer, just like Brendan did for Rachel in Big Brother 13. She comes back in, she goes out where he would have, and now he's free to, again, play his own game, free of the burden, the anchor that Kelsey brings to him. As with Kelsey in the house, it will remain this duo, this pair. Some people do want to work with them, but only because they're such a big target out in front of those people. So if HOH competitions go wrong, he could easily end up on the block. And now people realize how terrible Kelsey is at the game, and they could easily say, it's getting toward the end, where before we would have kept Jared because we wanted to work with him. Now he's getting too close to the end, and he's too big of a threat. We're going to take Jared out before Kelsey.
So JJ95 says, what do you guys think the next twist will be? I think that the viewers will choose who the next HOH will be. In that case, it's either going to be Nikki, Tim, Gag, that's JJ95's editorial, not my own, or maybe Joel winning the public's vote. Let's talk a little bit about this next wild card. They even showed the footage from Thursday's episode again during this episode about how on Wednesday, the next wild card will be revealed. Now, Alex, I know with the last wild card of the double fake eviction, there were leaks or, you know, internet hacks to figure out exactly what the twist has done. Are these monkeys at the computers? Have they figured out exactly what's been going on yet? Or has the Big Brother Canada internet as a whole really kept things locked up tight in terms of the next wild card?
If there are leaks out there, I haven't seen them yet. I mean, I think it's reasonable to assume that given, you know, that we're going to find out about it Wednesday night, that voting could take place for 24 hours and affect maybe the HOH Thursday, or I guess potentially the vote. I mean, but I would think it's also possible that it's kind of a week long thing, because the idea of, like, I don't know, I'm trying to remember how they've done it in the past. I guess they've done both, where you can vote for a week and they've done a 24 hour, haven't they?
Yeah. Taryn, what do you think the chances are of, as the question alluded to, of a return of Canada's HOH from season two?
I think they're probably pretty good. I mean, if the vote starts on Wednesday, it has to already be acting on information we have, right? So it can't be something, at least I don't think it could be something like a veto or a vote thing, because we don't know who's on the block, who's HOH or anything like that. So it has to be something to do with immediate situations in the future. So I imagine it has to do something with the HOH, or it's not game related, but let's be honest, it's game related. I mean, unless it again has something to do with people outside of the house, maybe, I mean, but there aren't really enough people outside of the house. So I think it has to have something to do with the HOH.
Listen, this is Big Brother Canada 4. Even if it was a vote on who do you want to give cookies to, these people would turn it as a reason to vote somebody out of this game. Let's be honest here, in the best way possible. Sean Tucker asked a rather interesting question. Are the third wheel the most unlikable alliance since the Friendship Alliance? So let's put on our editorial hats here, gentlemen. Alex, in your opinion, looking at the third wheel, have you ever disliked an alliance? First of all, do you dislike the third wheel on the whole? And if so, are they the most unlikable alliance since the Friendship, in your opinion?
Oh, man, what a loaded question. I mean, they're pretty hard to watch on feeds. They're very entitled, you know, but you definitely see this. I'm trying to remember, like, the last time I've seen it to this degree, though. I don't know. I mean, obviously, like, I didn't like the Exterminators when that came together. I wasn't a big fan of that group.
You weren't a fan of the Exterminators?
I was a fan of Andy. I love Spencer and I love Andy, but it was like, let's cobble together.
They saved the season.
Let's cobble together the last minute, like, you know.
I mean, yeah, speaking towards Big Brother 15, I might point the finger at the Boats and Hoes alliance that formed those first few weeks of like David and Nick and Gina Marie and Aaron, like specifically because of the havoc they caused both internally and externally on behalf of CBS. I mean, Taryn, I don't know if you have an answer here, but that's probably the most, like, in my opinion, morally reprehensible alliance we've had since the friendship here in Big Brother.
I think in terms of fan reaction, I think the first five was more disliked during their reign, just because probably they had so much power for so long. And you add Sabrina to that mix and people were so livid with them. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but like people, even though the Canada's HOH thing was horrid, people loved that they got to take out Andrew and put Sabrina on the block. You know, that I think in terms of fan reaction, people hated that one more.
All right, let's take a couple more questions here tonight with Alex and Taryn. Rose Dawn says, I like how Tim can control her nominations, but Ramsey can have no say. Another bit of a hyperbolic statement, is Maddie the worst player ever? So I'll answer on behalf of all of us in that I don't think she's the worst player ever. But Alex, I'd be interested to know, comparing all 16, arguably like 17 players against each other this season, is Maddie at least in the bottom like two or three of this season?
Yeah, she's down there because I think like Maddie, you know, in any given season, at least like, you know, I mean, there were a lot of bad players this season, but I mean, at least a player like Paige, like she went home presumably for like not talking to enough people. Whereas like Maddie, like when she talks to people, she makes enemies. So it's easy to see a scenario where Paige, like in most games, would do better. But like, you know, I also think like, you know, you could also make the argument like Maddie's second HOH, she's handled it pretty, at least the decisions have been good. I don't know about the way she's gone about it, but like LaVita was 0-2 on HOHs. So, I mean, you could argue she's better than her, I guess.
Yeah, she's got LaVita upside here. Taryn, what do you think? I mean, what can Maddie do in your opinion in order to bolster her reputation from the fan perspective in this game?
From the fan perspective, honestly, I think she's doing what she needs to do from the fan perspective. I mean, I don't think she's working, you know, well toward her goal of winning the game, but she's making these big, you know, moves to have no other word for it that people want to see. Like people wanted to see third wheel up on the block and she gave them what they wanted. And she's winning competition. She's being, you know, this big character. I think despite the fact she's one of those characters, I think that a lot of people are liking to dislike, if they don't hate her, if they don't love to hate her, maybe they like to dislike her. I think that she's doing well as far as the fan perspective goes. And as far as, you know, worst player in the house, I think Raul is by far the worst player in the house. Then probably Christine, and Kelsey's also down there. So certainly not worst of all time.
All right, one more question. LES247 asks, in a supposed BB Can All-Stars, let's everyone drink because BB Can All-Stars was mentioned. I feel like that's been like the big talk this past week. Do you think we will see the fan favorites targeted first over the strategist because of the likelihood of twists? Will a BB Can All-Stars game have these game-changing twists as usual? So a bit of an interesting last question where we're going to kind of put ourselves in the mind frame of BB Can All-Stars. So not necessarily pertaining to this game, but, you know, if we want to bring over a couple of people from this season that we think might play in BB Can All-Stars, let's. Generally speaking about this All-Stars season that may be upcoming, who knows? Who do you think would get targeted first, Alex, the strategists or the fan favorites? Considering that there is at least one twist every season where Canada votes on something, and in that case, the game is going to favor the fan favorites, at least for that 1 week.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure like what strategists that aren't fan favorites would make it. You know what I mean? Because the thing about it is like they don't tend to love. I mean, I guess Peter Brown. But beyond him, I mean, you know, like people love Netta and Netta is one of the strategists. Like people consider Godfrey a strategist and he's also a fan favorite. Like I think you're going to see people who are strategy minded and are also liked by Canada and then big personalities that are either liked or disliked by Canada. I think the strategists will probably be fewer in number, but I think they're probably going to be people that, you know, Canada wants to root for.
Well, go ahead, Taryn.
It's funny that you mentioned Peter Brown because I feel like he's the one strategist that would go after the well-liked people to his detriment, because that's how he sees the game, and it's all awfully wrong. I don't know if you saw the sideshow this week, but oh god.
Oh, I can only imagine what he said about Mitch, about how horrible of a game he played and all the mistakes he made.
He said since Mitch made it through exactly 54% of the game that he was going to give him a 54% on his like report card, which I guess means Sabrina is 100% perfect Big Brother player then.
Thank you, Professor Brown. Always the eminary source when it comes to objective grading of Big Brother gameplay. All right, so let's start wrapping things up here. While I'm starting to close these things out, chat room, I'm looking at you. If we could come up with a hashtag for the ending of this podcast. So, guys, are we locking in right now? Raul is going to be the one going home on Thursday. Can we sufficiently say that?
Yeah, I mean, unless something drastic changes, it should be Raul.
Which, with this house, is always a possibility. But Raul has certainly done a lot to hang himself.
I think that a lot of the crazy votes this season have been because of Mitch. And I think without Mitch gone, we'll see a lot more consistent votes that we'll be able to predict from Sunday night.
Very possible.
So it looks like Wednesday we'll be seeing this POV that was probably maze related. We might be seeing some Brownie Gate. We'll definitely be seeing some sour grapes on behalf of the third wheel, though no actual grapes because they're have-nots. But you will not be seeing us on Wednesday, as I mentioned before. We will all be at the live Survivor Know-It-Alls event. So if you are there, please come find this. Again, Alex will be there. Taryn will be there. Brent will be there. I will be there. Jordan Parhar, the man himself, will be there as well. It's going to be a really exciting event, and I'm really looking forward to it. So please come say hi. If not, again, Jordan will have a surprise podcast dropping on Wednesday. And of course, Rob will be back on Friday as well, and Jordan the next Sunday. I want to thank Alex and Taryn for coming on. Thank you guys, as always, for your fantastic contributions. Thank you for dealing with me while I spattered out about how frustrated I was with Raul for a good 2 minutes and probably shortened my life expectancy by a good like 2 years.
I think we all needed it.
Good. Hopefully you listeners enjoyed it as well. It looks like we're looking at a hashtag of either Big Babylonians or Big Babylon. Which one do you guys want to go with after Maddie's old school strategy?
Big Babylon.
All right, let's do Big Babylon. Sounds like a wrestling name, Alex. Maybe you can correct me on that. But I like it. Maybe that'll be a twist. They keep going forward in time with these themes on Big Brother Canada. Maybe one season they'll pull in opposite worlds and go, you know, back to the dawn of the age of the Stone Age. There was Big Brother.
I would like to see a house that has like an ancient theme. That would be very cool.
And just a lot of sand everywhere. If you really want to get these house guests complaining, just put sand in the house. It's fantastic. So again, I want to thank you guys all for, you know, especially those of you that are watching live. Thank you for submitting questions. Thank you, as always, to Scott St. Pierre up in that great white north that we were just talking about for the past hour for you know, fielding all these questions. We greatly appreciate it. For Taryn Armstrong and Alex Kidwell, I'm Mike Bloom on behalf of the Reality TV Happy Hour. #BigBabylon, and we will talk to you soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.